Preacher Kyle preached a lesson about life not too long ago, and I think we had both talked about some things about that, and I want to talk about that a little bit today. When I look at a beautiful scene like this, my first thought's always about life. I don't know why, you know, and I'm looking mostly at what I'm looking at is inanimate things for the most part, but trees are life, all of this, you know, without it, there would be no life, and certainly within the waters and up in the mountains and everything, we know that life is there. So life, where does it come from? Well, I'm going to take mine, and it'd be different certainly from, I just want to go forward, and he did a very good job on the lesson, but I want to talk about some things about that as well. In this lesson that Paul gave in Acts 17, 23 through 31, he certainly talked about life, and I've talked about this before, but I just want to read this today, and I'm actually going to go to another passage of Scripture that I hope will help us to really appreciate what we have in the physical. Just to understand what life is in the physical. But this is a lesson. For as I was passing by, Paul said to them, and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription to the unknown God. Therefore the one whom you worship, without knowing him I proclaim to you. God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything. And he's going to point out just the reverse, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. Pretty specific. And he's made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth and has predetermined their pre-appointed times. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. We pass over this sometimes, but let's do this again. He has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwelling, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our very being. And he says, as also some of your poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought to think that the divine ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art and man's devising. Truly these times of ignorance God overlooked. And Roger gave a lesson about that one time. But now has commanded all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he's ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. All of this is about life. And all of this is about the physical and how he raised him physically from the dead. He's talking about what God has done for all human beings, something they fail to recognize and something we struggle with. And he wanting them to know that God gives to all, not just some, not just randomly, not just haphazardly, but gives to all life, breath, and all things. Now here's the situation. Either this is a true statement or it's totally false. It can't be in between. I do this a lot because I just try to point out to people when they're trying to just kind of keep one foot in, one foot out, it's not possible. You either believe that God did it or you don't believe God did it. So the question arises, where does life come from? Now many would say the life just happened. It just randomly happened out there somewhere and it came from inanimate objects, and those inanimate objects eventually became breathing, living organisms. And they say accept that. Because we can't prove it, but listen, just accept it, because you'd be stupid otherwise. And others would say that God was involved, but then he allowed evolution to take over. So, kind of trying to join the two, you see, and just kind of reason out things that, well, this couldn't be this way, because, look, we have science, and science is exact. And that religion... Now, others would believe that God gave and continues to give life, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That it's always been him, and that's the way he did it, and it continues that way. Now, as Paul continued his lesson, he continues to say this. In him, he doesn't just make us and then drop back. We live and move and have our very being. You want to continue to exist? Well, there's only one way. And Job and the psalmist would say it this way. If he took his breath away from us, or his spirit, or ever how you want to look at that, whether it's our physical breath, which could be the meaning there, or if he took my life substance away from me, you know what happens? I die. You see, this is a clear statement. We're going to look at some things concerning life today. We're going to look at some scriptures that tell us where we came from, why we're here, and where we're going. All life comes from God, including human life. Now, how does human life begin? When does human life start? Oh, these are questions that people just, man, they struggle over this. It's like, wow, I just cannot figure this one out. Well, when does it actually happen? Let's turn to 139th Psalm. Now, David wrote this, let's just round it off, some 3,000 years ago. To the best of my knowledge, David wasn't a scientist. David didn't have all that background. He, I don't think, was a medical doctor. David was a shepherd. And so he had observed some things, certainly. But for him to know what we're going to talk about today, I don't think observation would have got him here. You know, this is revelation. The Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. There's not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You've hedged me behind or enclosed me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. And I think people still struggle with this, don't we? We all struggle with this concept. But he's going to try to say a few things that, as he's inspired to say, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me. And your right hand shall hold me. Well, if I say, surely the darkness shall follow me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. For you have formed my inward parts. You have covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me, while as yet there was none of them. That is a powerful statement. That goes back to what Paul just had taught the Athenians. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I could count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I'm awake, I'm still with you. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men, for they speak against you wickedly. Your enemies take your name in vain. Well, that reminds me of just so much, doesn't it, of what we're going through today. Every generation. Do not hate them. Do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you? And do not I loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties, and see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. This is such a magnificent song. This is a song that, as I thought of Maria Garrett today and Caleb Barnes today, the realization struck me, not just today, actually it was one of the purposes for this, the realization struck me that we need to understand where life comes from. That we as Christians need to be confident in what we believe in. That we need to be quite aware when we're talking to someone that the Bible knew, or writers of the Bible knew this 3,000 years ago. They didn't struggle with this like people do today. They fully understood what it was all about. You see, what it's all about is that there were three involved in this, and I appreciated so much our discussion in class this morning. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. And when we look at this, of course, when we look at the Old Testament, we don't see that as clearly defined, but we did see it in this passage. He understood it was the Spirit of God that gave life. But he makes some statements. He knows all. That he believes that he's omniscient. He says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me in verse 1. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be in more number than the sand. When I am awake, I'm still with you. Had this conversation with several people. Just had it with Cody yesterday. Take the sum total of all the knowledge and all the wisdom that's ever been on the face of the earth. You put it all together. And how great man thinks he is and how much knowledge he thinks he possesses. You put all that together. I'm talking about mankind, man and woman, child, everyone. And it's a sand as compared. One little piece of sand. We have no concept. We just fully can't get it. And that's why David says, as me, just too much. Well, he sees all. He's universal. He's everywhere. How's that possible? He said, well, you know my sitting down and my rising up. He knows David. He knows everybody else. You understand my thought afar off. There's nothing you don't know because you're everywhere. If I say, surely the darkness shall follow me, it's not going to happen. He said to you, night and day is the same. There's no darkness to you. You can see through anything. There's no hiding from you. You're everywhere. He's always existed. I could have used all this passage of Scripture, but I happen to like this one because you can take several meanings from it. He said, you have hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. It can have several meanings in this. In context, he's talking about the fact that God had enclosed him all the time. But God had pre-planned that he was going to enclose him all the time, so thus he must be pre-existent. This wasn't just, again, haphazard. This had all been planned. How long had God been planning David? From eternity. See, that's just mind-boggling to us, isn't it? That a being can do that. But on the other hand, for a person to accept the randomness of all this and say, well, that just happened, is more mind-boggling to me and requires a lot more faith. He's everywhere. Where can I go from your spirit? He's omnipresent. Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you're there. If I descend to Sheol, you're there. He's all-powerful. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. He can do anything. We sing no song. For Christ steals the ocean. It's all-powerful. He has power over everything. There's nothing he doesn't have power over. He gives and sustains life. You formed me in my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. And all of this passage where we're going to go through some of the parts of this. You see, not only that, but this might be the most powerful statement in all this. He determines right and wrong. And this is what David leaves it in his hands. He said, you judge them. They're your enemies. I hate them. And what he's saying is, I hate their ways. I hate what they're doing. They're talking about you, God, and I can't stand it when they do that. It hurts me for someone to put down God. It hurts me in two ways. One is for the fact that they're putting down my Maker. And the second way it hurts me is knowing that they're going to have to face Him in that. And that's exactly what David does. He's the judge. He determines right and wrong. You take it, Father. I know you can do it. But search me. I don't want to be your enemy. I want to be right with you, God. Know my anxieties. Know that I struggle. But also know that I'm on your side. I'm on your side. So what do we find? I could have put a lot more in here, but I just put these down. I can't, sum total of who God is impossible for us to comprehend other than what He's revealed. I can't do it. So let's then talk about the life in this. This is the most beautiful passage. He formed our inward parts. You think we're not special? When's He doing that? Why, He did that after I came out. No, He did not. He did that while I was in the womb. I had inward parts when I was in the womb. When I was in my mother's womb, I had inward parts. Let me tell you how this word is used. It's a word that typically can be translated kidney or reins. And I know people have made fun of the fact that the Old Testament writers talked a lot about the kidneys. They're talking about, though, just in general, the inward parts that we need to exist. Our organs. You see, He made every organ. But each part's unique to me. My heart has never been given to anyone else. I have a heart that He gave me inside my mother's womb. I don't know how big that thing was. It's probably something like this. He gave that to me. He's never, ever given that to anyone else. Inside my mother's womb, He gave me my kidneys. He's never given those to anyone else. He gave me mine. He gave me my parts. He put those together inside my mother, is what He's saying. It's not the fact that it just is going to happen. He still has control of it. He still had pre-planned Abe Martin. When did he pre-plan Abe Martin before time began? In eternity, he planned me. I'm unique. We'll talk about that. It's used like this. In Psalm 16:7, I'm going to use the New King James Version. If you have another version, you're going to find that some of these words will vary. But the heart instructs. From our kidneys, he's saying, from our internal being, we will receive instruction. He's saying, physically, we can receive instruction. In Psalm 26:2, it's used as mind, not the heart. Try my mind, and the heart's another word. You can see how he's using this word. It's not just a word to talk about a physical organ. It's a word talking about what we are given from God. He formed our inward parts. He covered us in our mother's womb. That's not happenstance. That pregnancy is somehow something that man's come up with. No. He gave us a covering that we could be inside of. He put us in a place that He wanted us to be in, that He made very special and safe. He meant for it to be safe. He meant for that to be as if you're putting something in a vault somewhere and it's locked up. That's the way God wanted it. And He could do that. But He lets man have his free will. Because on God's part, He never meant to be another way. This covering, it's sometimes translated defense, shut up, fenced in. It's letting us know that God is our defense. That regardless of what happens to that child, and in this audience people have lost children, that God is the one. He's the defense of that child. He'll take care of that child. You have no concern about it whatsoever. He'll take care of it. Job 38:8 would use it as shut in by the seas, or shut in as God shut in the sea. And we were talking about that yesterday. He gave it its boundaries. God decided what the boundaries were for this forming of this human being. God did. And in Psalm 5:11, He uses it as a defense. You defend them, this word is used as. He is our defense. That regardless of what man might decide to do with that unborn child, that God is its defense. And He'll take care of that. He'll take care of that. And it says our frame was not hidden from Him. I was given a frame, a skeleton, with the muscles that go with it. Now, my muscles aren't what they used to be. I don't know that they ever were very much, but they sure aren't what they used to be. But you take our frame, that little skeleton that starts forming inside the womb, that just tiny little skeleton, those tiny little bones, and in the second lesson we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's so beautiful in my mind. It's the substance, and that word means might and power. That my power, my might, was given to me while I was in my mother's womb. That I came out with that skeleton, and it continued to grow because of God. Now, obviously we're talking about normal here. We're talking about what God intended. We're not talking about the abnormal. But in Deuteronomy 8:17, this is the way it's used. My power and the might of my hand. It's God's might. It's God's power put inside this body. It's God that gives it its frame, gives it everything. And Job 30:21, we use it like this. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. It is God's strength. But He made us in secret. We guess at when conception starts. And they're pretty good at it. How do they know when conception began? Well, if it was random, you wouldn't. But it's timed. They can look at how far the baby has grown inside the womb and they can figure out pretty much when it started. Now, the exact moment, though, the exact, absolute, exact split second that life started, you know who's the only one knows? He made us in secret. We can't know. Just absolutely can't know. We can't guess at it. We can get close. And they're pretty good at it. Can't know. Secret means a secret. Secret place. Covert. Hiding place. We're put inside. And it's secret. Until all of a sudden one day it's like, that person, that woman, not person, that woman, is with child. Deuteronomy 27:24, cursed is the one who attacks his neighbor secretly. That is, where others don't know. Psalm 31:20, you shall hide them in the secret place of your presence. But he skillfully skillfully wrought us in the lowest parts of the earth. And you might glance over this passage, and it's such a beautiful passage. And sometimes I forget that it's here. And I should remember this passage all the time, because you know what it means? It means someone who embroiders things. Someone who fabricates things. Someone who does needlework. That little fine needlework. And we look at the beauty of some of the things that people make. Mostly women. I know some men that can do that as well. I never could. I mean, it was like one of those things. I could sew up a few things and it didn't look too good. But I was amazed at what people could make. And how they skillfully put that together until it became what they wanted. And you know what's amazing about it? You can never make two of them 100% identical. So what's God doing? It's letting us know that inside the womb, He skillfully is making and made me. That's such a beautiful thought. He's letting me know that He didn't leave me alone in there. That every second, every millisecond, He's working on that. And He's skillfully doing that. And He's beautifully putting together human beings. Unique ones. Every moment. In Exodus 26:36, it's talked about, and this word is translated as a weaver. One who weaves. One who puts... Let me tell you something. You give me, certain things, and I hope I'm going to get through this lesson. You give me certain things, and you take them apart and tell me to put them back together. I remember one time, as a kid, I used to take things apart all the time. My dad gets so aggravated at me, and finally one day he said, "That's it. You will put that back together, and it better work when you get through." Well, that taught me a lesson. That sometimes it's hard. It's much easier to take it apart than it is to put it back together. And I spent a long time on that because I was very fearful. And I wanted to make sure I got that thing back together and it worked. And thankfully, it did. For me. Now, you think about this for a moment. That take all my body parts now. Every atom, every piece of me, and throw them out there. Who could put it back together? He did that while I was inside my mother's womb so that I am what I am today. That's the beauty of this. He took all the thread. He took all of the whatever you have and skillfully put it together. Now that's beautiful to me. And of course, again, translated as a weaver. But it's in the lowest parts of the earth. Think about this for a moment. Here you are inside of water, inside your mother's womb, just kind of swimming around there. And lowest parts of the earth. In the darkness, He's putting all that together. In that secret place, in that hidden place, in that place where we are. It means lowest most part, pit, womb, nether parts. As in this, you have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol, in those lower parts. Shout, you lower parts of the earth. The purpose behind that, obviously, for birth to take place. There's a reasoning behind all of this. That indeed, this has even a higher meaning, I believe, that originally, what did He make us from? The earth. The first man was made from dust. And you know what? Every one of us followed that pattern. All the things of us are in this earth. But He watched over us when our substance was unformed. Now why is this so beautiful? Because, again, I don't know when that moment of conception took place. If we took that, we've got the seed of man and the seed of woman. It's not formed. How is that possible? How can you take two separate seeds, put them together, being unformed, and then He starts this process. And when did life begin? God began life right then and there. And we tend to forget that. It means a wrapped and unformed mass. At the very beginning, that is true. But it doesn't take very long. I know you've all seen the pictures. I thought today, and I thought, no, I better undo that. Bring some pictures of this. To get it in their mind that it doesn't take very long before you can tell that's a human being. It's not very long before it actually has that shape. It. He or she has that shape. It's the only time this word's used in the Old Testament. He in his book predesigned us according to 139:16. If you think about this for a moment, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. And in your book, they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there was none of them. You talk about an amazing thing. God wrote about me before I entered this life. He had it all written down. Now, He did not need to put that in a book. That's not what's being said here. It's just like His book of life. God doesn't need something actually written down, but it's saying, in His mind, it is done. There will be no changing that. That was going to happen. How do I know that? Well, this word means written, described, recorded, prescribed. When did He say He did that? When as yet there was none of them. When I didn't have a single page, He wrote a whole book. And you know what's scary about that is? He knows the end of the book. I don't know that end. He doesn't live in time. God lives in eternity. And there's a vast difference. It is used like this in talking, "Behold, I come, and the scroll of the book is written to me," talking about Christ. Written. It's something that is already in stone. "Behold, it is written before me." Now, how can God do all of this and still leave it up to me? He can still do that. Just because He knows doesn't mean that He didn't give me freedom of choice and make me so that I have that. We'll talk about it in the next lesson. He fashioned our days even before we had days. Isn't that beautiful? He fashioned them. He molded them. He was the potter. He purposed them. He already knew about Jacob and Esau. He didn't make them that way so that one was sinful and one was not, but He already knew. He already knew about Pharaoh. But He didn't make him that way. Pharaoh had choice. And He hardened him in that He told him, "This is what you'll do." And Pharaoh said, "I'm not going to do it. Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice?" Same as it was at the beginning. Same exact word when He formed man from the beginning. And this is so beautiful. This is actually used twice in this passage. "Woe to him who strives with his maker," the former, the one who fashions us. "Shall the clay say to him who forms it, 'What are you making?'" In the last part of this, "We are fearfully and wonderfully made." I want to read this verse and then please look at what these words mean. "I will praise you," praise, revere, worship, thank Him, "for I am fearfully, reverently made." That means that God didn't just do this randomly. He took great patience and care and everything in forming every human being. Wonderful, marvelous, separate, set apart, all the meanings of these words. That's what we are. And His works, these marvelous, wondrous, miraculous things too high. And it was a work. Something that God did. He took time, actions, labor, operation, handiwork. It's His handiwork. I'm His handiwork. I did not in and on myself. And I used this the other day. Pull myself up by my own bootstraps. It is through God that I exist and continue to exist and continue to have breath and life. God made each and every person who's ever existed, who now exists, or will exist in the future. God's still doing it. No, He hasn't just left all this and randomly hoped that things worked out. He's still doing it. Just as He fashioned each one of us in our mother's womb, He can refashion or operate on us when we are born again by baptism. Isn't that a beautiful thing? The old birth, I came out of my mother's womb. He had taken something, fashioned it, and made it, and then I came out. The new birth, same thing. He took something old and dead, if you will, put it down into the water, and I came out a new creation, a new creature. Paul stated this well in Colossians 2:11-12 when he states, "It is the working of God," in the old King or the New King James. The old King James says, "The operation of God that removes sin when we're buried with Christ in baptism." It is said that happens just as God raised Christ from the dead. It's through the power of the working of God. It's still His power that removes sin. It's still His power that gives life, spiritually as well. God not only fashioned us in the physical womb, but we can have newness of life by being immersed in baptism with Christ. Do you have any needs? Now, I say this, and I should say it more frequently. You don't have to wait until I get to this point, because this is just a good thing that we do in allowing someone the opportunity. We make it very easy for anyone that has any needs. If you do, either come forward, raise your hand, or whatever, and we'd be glad to assist you in any way we can. Would you please stand for the song?